Relationship is about moving towards each other and moving away from each other. And if we're lucky, we get to do that with someone for 30 years or so. A wonderful teacher of mine, Julie Henderson, said that. It's been on my notice board for years because it points to a fact that I find personally very comforting. No relationship is smooth sailing all of the time, even the best of them. We're constantly moving in and out of connection. But why? This is skill number 3, empathy. We're continuing to dive into the skills for resolving conflicts constructively from the book Everyone Can Win. There's a lot to say on empathy and its ebbs and its flows, so there's 2 episodes for this skill. This first part is about how we build a solid foundation for the relationship and how we damage that, usually quite unconsciously, and how we can fix things when they've gone wrong. They say we have empathy when we can put ourselves in the other person's shoes, understand their situation and their feelings, and how things look from their perspective. Well, in conflict, this is critical. Relationship saving. If we take a little time to appreciate the context of the other person's experiences, as well as their beliefs and their underlying good intentions, we open to the other person. And if they get it that we have, that we really do care about them, then they'll become more open to us too. And that's our chance to turn it around. Empathy is the oil in the works of smooth communication. It doesn't fix a problem between you, but it makes any problem easier to fix. Can you think of someone who you'd say is really empathic? What does it look like in them? Well, I bet they're not rigid. They generally can put their judgments to one side and open up to other points of view, even if there's a bit of flack along the way. But they're not held up by differences in race, religion, or in beliefs. And they're compassionate. They genuinely care. Well, if there's someone like that in your personal life, you're really lucky. Let them be your role model. When you think of a person that you really do feel open to, ask yourself, what's helping the empathy flow between us? You may think, well, they're friendly. They listen to my problems and they tell me about theirs. They don't put me down. They understand where I'm coming from. You might both be at the same point of your path through life and can share experiences. Or you might be passionate about the same thing, a strong interest or a hobby that you can chat about together. Whatever your point of connection, you'll probably notice that you respect each other and that you don't have to be perfect around them or overly formal. You can say to yourself, I can be myself with this person. I feel safe. All of that is empathy, and that's what so often takes a tumble once we're in conflict. So our challenge becomes, how do we maintain empathy while we're working through difficulties with each other? Remember that initial quote? Relationship is about repeatedly moving towards each other and moving away from each other. The climate between you and the other person is constantly shifting, like the weather. Say the other person does something really annoying or seems indifferent or disconnected. You'll turn away. And there's going to be times when we make mistakes, or they do, or when they can't accept our ideas, our wishes, or our actions. We tread on each other's toes, and our empathy temporarily takes a nosedive. Can you turn back towards them? You might need a quick chat with yourself along the lines of, I don't have to prove I'm right. I'm still a fine person, even if I got something wrong. What can I do now to sort this out? Or, yes, I'm cranky with them about this issue, but of course I still really care about them. You're making a choice to keep that empathy doorway a little open. When we finally learn that a person's behaviour has more to do with their own internal struggle than with us, we really get a handle on this empathy thing. And so often when we're cranky with them, it's actually about our own private irritations. They're just busy being themselves. When a relationship really lacks empathy, you can limp along with it or drop the relationship or do something about fixing it. And of course, you won't want to fix every breakdown. But when you can't avoid the person or you'd lose out because the relationship's failing, it's worthwhile trying something to improve the empathy flow between you. So bring to mind someone who you presently are having problems with. Independently of the problems themselves, would there be a benefit in working towards a better relationship with them? How might you build a bridge? Here are some tried and true methods you can use. Firstly, work on the relationship separately from the problem. Find some safe conversation topics. Choose topics that don't involve the problems that you're having. What are the other person's interests? When do they come most alive? What excites them? Can you just hang out together for a bit? A good chat on a safe topic can be a great empathy builder. It's like you're just listening to the music of each other's voices, relaxing. You're not trying to fix anything, you're just establishing or re-establishing that flow between you, tuning in to each other. The point is, it's warm and it's not stressed. Pick your time and place with care. Of course, if someone's in the middle of telling you about their problem or something that matters to them, that's not the time to switch to small talk. That's listening time. And vice versa. Don't try for a deep and meaningful conversation when the other person is either too rushed or stressed to concentrate. Or you're somewhere where you could be overheard and the conversation needs a bit of privacy. Try sharing an activity. At work, it might be going out together to check a new piece of equipment, or brainstorming a new project together, or having a working bee on reorganizing the office. At home, try cooking or going for a walk or watching Netflix together. With a troubled friendship, you might suggest an outing with them, maybe a movie or a sports game. You don't have to make a big thing of it. Just take a step in the direction of empathy. Empathy breakdowns with our parents are a special case. We are hypersensitive to them, and they can bring out the worst in us. We might be ruder to them than we'd ever be to anyone else. Our parents should be our core source of emotional support, and unfortunately some parents were never cut out for the role. They couldn't support you appropriately in your childhood, and they can't do it now. Can we accept what is about them? And is it possible that their intention is actually loving and concerned, even if their personal issues are always getting in the way? Can you build your empathy bridge on that underlying good intention without letting yourself get hooked into the rest of their stuff? But look after yourself. Steer conversations together towards non-sensitive issues, both yours and theirs. A bit of love can flow even if you're only able to talk to them about the most mundane things. And that helps keep your heart open for your other relationships. You'll also be rewarded for any effort that you put into improving empathy with a parent when you both have major issues that you must discuss. If you really intend to build more bridges in your relationships in your life, you'll need to avoid the communication killers. We've got lots of bad habits when we talk to each other. It's much easier to spot the bad habit in another person than to look at our own. So let's start with others. Perhaps they don't leave enough space for you to open up because they're always holding the floor. When you're in the middle of telling about your day, do they hijack the conversation and make it all about themselves or their agenda? How do you feel then? Ignored and unheard? Have you tried to unload with someone about how angry someone else is making you feel? And then they say back to you, well, there's nothing to be upset about here. Where does that leave you with the upset? Well, nowhere with that particular person. Your sense of empathy does an about turn and marches off. Perhaps the other person turns most of the conversation into a debate, and they're always criticizing your ideas. How do you feel then? Does your smile grow a bit fixed? Unfortunately, we ourselves can easily provoke this negative sort of reaction. We roll out some common stock phrases or say something glib, and we're not really thinking about what we're saying. And we close off and we cool down the relationship without even realizing what we've done. Listen to the following examples and consider if you use any of them yourself from time to time. They're common communication killers that we regularly inflict on each other. Each of us will probably have our own particular variations. Here's the first one. Giving solutions or advice when the other person just wants to be heard. Oh, if you'd just be more organized, you wouldn't be in this panic. Or, why don't you do it this way? Have you tried? Or, just ignore them, get over it. Do any of those sound familiar to you? Are any of them coming out of your mouth? If you've offered several pieces of advice and all you hear back are yes, but, then it's time to take another tack entirely. Turn off the advice. They're not ready to hear it. You think you're helping, but you're obviously not. Another communication killer. Perhaps you refuse to address the issue, and it sounds like, there's nothing to discuss, I can't see your problem. Or you take the intellectual high ground and you try to persuade them with logic. There's nothing to be upset about here. You're being unreasonable. And we turn away or sidestep the issue by changing the topic. Sometimes, of course, we just don't want to go there. But what if that's not really our deeper intention? If someone raises an issue they have with us, we really do need to let them have their say, rather than shutting them down. That's if we value the relationship. We do this one a lot. We reassure the other person and dismiss their concerns. Watch for, relax, don't be nervous, or you'll be fine, or there's plenty more fish in the sea, time heals all wounds. Have you missed an opportunity to validate the other person's experience and show that you care about what they're going through? Another communication killer. Watch out if you start telling your own story before you've given the other person enough time on theirs. We use conversations to discharge some of our pent-up emotions. And we can help each other in this, but not if we short-circuit the process. If they say, I had a dreadful car accident last week, it doesn't work if you jump straight in with, oh, let me tell you about mine. Relationships are a two-way process, and each person needs roughly equal time. Don't hog the space. Or when someone starts talking about a disagreement with their spouse and you switch the attention onto yourself. You think that's bad. When I was with my partner, it was even worse. Don't try to top the other person's bad experience with your own worse one. We each have our own journey, and that's what's important. You can swerve right into the path of conflict if you play the psychologist and start diagnosing their motives. You might say, oh, you're very possessive, or you always have a problem with motivation. If you've been on the receiving end, you'll know how riled it makes you. Don't diagnose. Move closer to them than the place from which you do that. Oh, we've got lots of habitual patterns that kill communication. We want someone to do something and we manipulate them with insincere praise. Or we withhold some relevant information and we might think we've been clever. But if the outcome is not actually to their advantage, the other person will be pretty annoyed if they ever find out. When we threaten, lay down the law, or put the other person down, We've shut all empathy right down, and we'll have quite a job ahead of us to fix that. Do you recognize some of those communication killers? Have you done one or more of them yourself recently? Tag them as a no-no, and quickly counteract them if they slip out of your mouth by mistake. Polish up your empathy skills. And remember, it doesn't hurt to apologize. But there's one proviso, though. Your real communication is the response that you get. In other words, it's how people react to your comment that counts. And even a doubtful communication could work out just fine if it feels supportive to the other person. We communicate on so many levels, and our words are only one of them. The tone of our voice is another. Our underlying positive regard for the person is a third. People constantly interpret and sometimes misinterpret their relationship with you through all these layers. And no matter how good your words are, if they feel you don't respect them, then your communication has not been effective. Your real communication is the response you get. Notice also if the other person says or does something that hasn't worked for you. And rather than letting empathy slide away, you might want to help them get a better response from you. You could start off with something like, "When you said I was worrying about nothing, I felt really put off, but I don't think that's what you intended." Or, "When I'm upset, I don't need you to fix the problem. I really just want you to listen and try and understand me." When another person is not responding well to you, it's usually because they don't feel heard by you. Well, hearing just happens, but listening, really listening, that's a choice. And poor listening habits can be very ingrained. Here are three distinct types of situations that really need good listening. We call them information, affirmation, and inflammation. Firstly, when your purpose is to gain information, there are important facts and details to be clarified. You need to get a full and clear picture from the other person. Secondly, when your purpose is to give affirmation, the other person really needs to be heard out on issues that are troubling them. And thirdly, where there's inflammation. The other person is inflamed and furious with you. These are all situations that demand your best listening skills. Let's get into some more details. Say your purpose is to gain or clarify information about a situation. Don't let your investigation turn into an interrogation. You may be looking into something as simple as why your kid came home with only one shoe from soccer practice. But perhaps you've got to investigate an accident when someone's been seriously injured, or there's been sexual harassment or bullying or racial discrimination. If the other person feels scared of getting blamed, getting the information you need will never be easy. That subtle bond of empathy may be non-existent. People clam up or they lie or accuse others to protect themselves. Our own judgmental attitudes fog up our fact-finding even further, and they alienate the person that we're trying to question. They should be able to see you as someone they can turn to when they're in difficulty, and if this fact-finding mission turns into an interrogation, there will be permanent damage to the trust in the relationship. Switch to listening mode and drop any prejudgments or hidden or overt accusations. You just want to find out the details or be clear on instructions or get a sense of the whole picture. Non-verbally, you're going to need to use appropriate body language. You'll be nodding or noting or recording and watching. Concentrate. Block out any distractions. Encourage the other person to be specific. You'll ask questions to get the facts on timing, requirements, context, cost, or whatever it is. Confirm with them that you've understood by repeating back to them key points or relevant details. Be sure you both agree on the facts. It's the only listening situation where note-taking can help. It's generally best to stay with what, when, where, and how questions. Almost any why question will send you down the hole of interrogation and make the other person defensive. You're questioning their reasoning. What if your purpose in switching to some serious listening is affirmation? You're trying to support another person with an issue they have. They seem to want to talk it through with you, and so you're giving them the space to do so. If the other person seems withdrawn after something that you've said, drop your own agendas and start listening more attentively. If you can really listen well, they'll understand better how the problem's affecting them. And often, that's all they need. They don't really want advice from you. Occasionally, you might repeat back something they've said if you want to check that you've really understood them. Or perhaps you might say a little more, just enough to encourage the other person to keep the flow going. The key is to show a caring interest. You don't have to fix it. Just give them airtime in the conversation. Sometimes you'll only need to do that quite briefly, and then the conversation just rolls on quite smoothly. But sometimes you'll need to keep the focus totally on the other person for quite a while. So stay flexible and respond to what's needed this time. You show your concern for what's happening for them, and even if you disagree or privately think their behaviour is unjustified, you reserve your judgment and drop the normal give and take a conversation just for a while. Like changing gears, it's a significant shift. So check, are you really listening? Or are you just waiting for your turn to speak? If your own thoughts or feelings or reactions creep in, refocus on the other person. Don't work out what to say on your behalf, at least for now. Consider the responsibilities you take on when you really listen well. You're so focused on how it is for the other person that you aren't judging them at all. For that time, you're on the inside of their problem with them. You're digesting their experience with them. And you listen to more than the words. Tone of voice and body language will tell you quite as much, sometimes more than the words themselves. Giving them your best attention invites them to continue. And people will often tell you very personal things if they do decide to open up to you. You may need to reassure them that you'll respect their privacy. And do so. It's the only way you'll be trusted again. When we're listening well, we're listening with the heart as well as the head, and we're tuning into their whole context, how it all is for them. Sean told our group about flipping into just listening with his mother recently. His father was in hospital for some fairly routine surgery, and his mother seemed anxious. Sean said he'd tried several times to reassure her that all would be well, when it dawned on him that his words weren't dispelling her concerns, and all he was doing was shutting her down. So the next time she told him that she was anxious, he put his own thoughts aside and shifted into really listening, just with a gesture inviting her to say more about that. And she began to talk about her concerns for her husband's overall health and the real possibility of his death and what that might mean for her and for the family. It was one of the most bonding conversations that Sean and his mother had ever had together. That shift to really listening had made all the difference. The type of careful listening that Sean did with his mum is often called active listening. So here are some how-to hints for good active listening. You focus your attention totally on the speaker. You're not talking about yourself or adding any well-intentioned comments. So what do you say? Actually, very little. Mainly, you'll find yourself just nodding your head or putting in an occasional, And from time to time, in your own words, you might reflect back what you understand they're trying to say, but make it a question, inviting confirmation rather than a statement. Are you saying that, or have I got this right? You were really hurt when... You're encouraging them to correct you if necessary. You're feeding back to them their feelings as you've understood them, and perhaps a very brief summary of some important fact they've mentioned. If it's appropriate in the relationship, you could probe a little. How do you feel about that? Or you sound upset. How did that affect you? And you don't have to pretend that you've understood something if you haven't. You can certainly say, can you explain that to me again? It's important to allow pauses in the conversation. There's a natural shift that occurs when someone names something well for themselves, but that shift takes a bit of time to unfold. So even if there's a long silence, don't fill it in, don't change topics, just wait quietly. If, after the pause, you sense a change in their energy, you might gently ask, how does that all seem to you now? Don't advise, diagnose, or criticize. When you're in active listening mode, avoid changing, challenging, or improving what they've said. And as Sean learnt in the previous story, it's also not the time to reassure them or cheer them up. You want their inner exploration to continue, not to be mopped up by your well-intentioned comments. Try not to ask too many fact-finding questions either. But it might be okay to hand them tissues. The process itself does the work, and better than you can. When they really focus on what they're experiencing, and they name it well, magic happens. Their understanding shifts of its own accord. If it's a problem that needs a solution, they're likely to find it themselves once their understanding of how it all is for them grows. And that will be the solution that they are willing to act on. When active listening is going well, you appear to be doing very little at all. You may be saying nothing for a long time, but you're offering your presence and caring while they do their inner exploration. And that's doing a lot. People rarely get listened to really well. So don't think ahead about what you're going to say next. Let them take the lead. And when they're ready, they'll move on to the next part of their problem. Falling off the rails. When active listening is going well, it's like a train travelling smoothly on a track. But with the best of intent, we'll sometimes say or do something that derails that. Sometimes you'll say something and it doesn't go down well. Perhaps you change topics when they weren't ready to leave the issue. Perhaps you started advising. Apologize and help them get back on track. Sometimes the person may start drifting off the topic to less significant, safer matters. Let that be their choice. They'll get back to it when they're ready. And that may be after 5 minutes of lighter chat, or they may not be ready to go any further today. If you've done your active listening well, you'll both exit with more empathy for each other. The other person feels safe to be themselves with you, and your understanding of them grows. Sarah told us that she and her husband Paul had a really good supportive relationship. But it was really tested when his business was going through a very rough patch. He and Sarah talked together every evening about what the best next steps would be, and she felt it was great to support him like that. They were a real team, she felt. Then one evening he came home to tell her that Lizette, an old girlfriend of his, had rung him that day. She was offering to work with him and help him build up the business again. Paul asks Sarah whether she felt he should take up Lisette's offer. Well, she knew Lisette. She was very competent and experienced, but Sarah wasn't at all sure of her motives towards Paul. Was she still after him? She'd love to have said, "Tell her to go away." She didn't want Paul employing an old girlfriend. But the whole thing was very touchy. If she demanded that Paul didn't employ Lisette, how would he react? He might do the opposite, or blame her jealousy for his business going further downhill. The one thing she could see was that she dared not give any sort of advice. So instead she asked Paul, "What factors would you want to look at before you could make a decision?" And he soon realised that he needed to know what Lisette's real expectations were, so he organised a meeting with her. Paul told Sarah about it afterwards. He said Lisette had come along to the meeting, his words, "Seduction Incorporated," the perfect makeup, the tight dress, the sexy glances. Paul said he could see that work was only an excuse for what was really on her mind. Well, that was exactly what Sarah had suspected, but it seemed to her a very good time to just say nothing and keep on listening. Well, that proved to be a smart move, because the next thing Paul said was that he'd already rejected Lisette's offer. Needless to say, Sarah was hugely relieved. She'd left Paul making all his own decisions, and she just stuck to her role of being his sounding board. So we've looked at where good listening will serve you well in two types of situations: gathering information and providing affirmation or support. There's a third situation: when the other person is really angry with us. To respond to inflammation, stop. You need to quickly shift gears into listening mode. Your first and foremost job is to let them know that you've heard them. Really listen to their accusations and how strongly they feel about it. This is not you agreeing, this is you listening to them. The point is that they need to get that you really do understand how angry they are with you and why. At the height of their anger, telling them to calm down or explaining yourself will just inflame them further. Here's the thing: when they feel heard, really heard, they will come off the boil. Your body language is crucial. Face the other person. Don't cringe. Keep those hands off your hips. Yes, it's quite a challenge when you're under attack. You need to stay stable, centered. Briefly focus your attention into your belly and breathe into that spot. Consider where your feet are. Can you get both of them on the ground? Breathe as calmly as you can. Be seen to be really listening to what they're saying, and keep it going till they're finished. Don't retaliate or justify. At least once, confirm and summarize the gist of what they're saying. You're not agreeing. You're showing that you've taken on board the message they're delivering. You might say, "Oh, I can see how much that matters to you," or, "No wonder you're so upset if you thought that was my attitude." Your responses shouldn't sound like you're unconcerned. Stay emotionally present. Indicate that you've understood with a clear yes or a strong okay or oh. Show that you're acknowledging their feelings. You might also need to ask a few questions to better understand the cause of the problem. It is so tempting to go into counterattack. You might do it to justify yourself or to top their accusations with some of your own. But defending or attacking at the peak of their anger is only going to inflame them further. Listening is your most effective way to soothe them down. Let them get out all they need to. Show them that you've taken in exactly what they're saying. Then they might be able to hear your perspective. But if you try and they heat up again, then just go straight back to listening. It may take a few rounds before you're both able to talk together more calmly about the underlying issues. So here's where we are so far. You're building empathy bridges so it's easy to move towards each other when everything's smooth between you both, and so that when there are conflicts and you back away, you don't seriously damage the underlying relationship. Share activities that you both just enjoy together, setting any problems aside for a while. Avoid those communication killers so that you don't unwittingly shut the other person down. And switch quickly to good listening whenever you need to collect information, affirm the other person's distress or concern, or when the other person is inflamed and their anger is directed at you. What else does empathy need? Well, we need a bridge repair kit for when things have gone wrong. Say we've argued and now there's emotional distance between us. You need to be able to acknowledge the contributions that you have made to the problem. A simple way to say that is take your share of the blame. But blaming yourself or the other person only worsens the problem. So we need to shift from blame to contributions. Reframe arguments about who's to blame into conversations about what are the contributions. It's always worthwhile considering how you've played some part in creating the problem, especially if up to now you've been acting like it's all the other person's fault. That way you're exploring the whole story and not just its surface issue. For example, getting it wrong. You're blaming an employee for not passing on some vital information. Getting it right, you'd look at how you've contributed to the issue, perhaps by appearing too busy to be interrupted. We get it wrong when we shift all the blame onto others, and we also get it wrong when we absorb all the blame ourselves. Around blame, don't be a shifter and don't be an absorber. Neither is likely to be accurate. Conflicts are rarely only caused by one person. Getting it right is starting a contributions conversation. Sometimes you'll need time to reflect on the flare-up and have your contributions conversations later when the heat of the argument's called. A contributions conversation can help you repair and deepen the relationship. You might start one with something like, I can see that I've contributed to this by, and whatever that is. As the other person sees you wearing some of the responsibility, the climate between you improves. We might choose to apologise for the bits of the problem we're responsible for. An honest apology will often repair the bridge between you. And as we take responsibility for our contributions, we find we're more forgiving too. Perhaps they'll reciprocate and consider their own role in the problem. If they can manage that, well, that's when the real power of a good contributions conversation shows up. After the dust has settled, it's a way to clear the air. You may not have fixed many of the issues, but you've aired your withholds in a mutually supportive way. You each focus on your own contributions to the issue, and you leave the other person to think about theirs when and if they're ready. It gives you both the opportunity to plan how to prevent similar problems arising in the future. This happened with David. He was recently divorced and now living with Deborah, together with her children from her previous marriage, so it was complex. He told me that his 12-year-old daughter Zoe also spent every second weekend with them, but that had become a nightmare. Zoe and Deborah's 10-year-old daughter were always bickering, and they seemed to be jealous of each other and constantly competing over everything. Another fight had exploded in the girls' bedroom, And by the time David came onto the scene, they were screaming at each other. And when he tried to find out what was going on, Zoe turned on him and yelled, "I hate you. You always take her side." And then she ran out the front door, slamming it in his face when he tried to follow her. David said he was really alarmed and he thought, if I don't do something right now, Zoe could get herself lost. So he ran down the street after her. Drama indeed. And he called out, "Slow down. If you run off now, we won't be able to sort this out." Well, it did work. She turned around and he managed to catch up with her. Tears were streaming down her face, and between sobs she accused him of loving his new family more than her. He realized that there was no point in defending himself or in telling her off. She was too distressed and angry to hear him. So he just apologized for not giving her enough attention, and how wrong that was, because she was his very own daughter. He told her how special she was to him, and he took responsibility for his part of the problem. He'd let himself get too busy trying to make everyone happy. Well, that seemed to give her the courage to speak more frankly, and she blurted out that she felt like an outsider in his new family. They both agreed that they should have talked much sooner about how the new arrangement was going to be for her. Once she knew that he'd really heard her and he'd owned up to his contribution to her problems and that he wasn't about to criticize her, she calmed down. And he asked her what could he do now to make it easier for her. They decided that they needed some special father-daughter time together, just the two of them. They went back into the house and let the others know they were going out for a walk. As they strolled down to the beach, they explored some practical changes that would make it better for her when she stayed with him. They were getting back to how they used to be with each other, honest about the issues and able to talk things through. Here's a summary of the empathy skills we've discussed in this episode. When the relationship is tense, you may be able to build a bridge with some safe conversations or a shared activity. Avoid the communication killers. They're bad habits that shut the other person down. Don't dismiss their concerns or sidestep an issue. Don't hog the space. Each person deserves their time on center stage. Don't diagnose their motives or take the intellectual high ground when strong emotions are involved. Your real communication is the response you get. How people react to your comments is what counts. Listening is your go-to technique for gathering information, supporting and affirming another person's distress or concerns, and for responding to inflammation when someone is angry with you. A contributions conversation can repair a damaged bridge between you. It can soften the tensions during or after a conflict. Take responsibility for your part of the problem. It may go further and help you clear the air with each other as you build a picture together of the factors that have contributed to the problem. It moves you both away from blame and towards mutual problem solving. If you want more written material about all this, there's lots of extra reading and training resources on our website, Conflict Resolution Network. Our headquarters are at crnhq.org. In the next audio, part two of empathy, we'll explore how to understand why other people seem so different and how we can learn to accept that about them. It's another skill that oils the works of good relationships.